All right, we're back.
This is episode 15.
One more NFT in the wallet, Isaac. What do you got?
That's right. One more NFT. I've just picked up our first drop, which is Weekend on a Tuesday.
And it's actually a banger. So I'm a very proud owner of two NFTs the project. And,
you accidentally bought two, Nathan.
I may have accidentally bought two. But it's all part of the fun. So I'll be double as rich as you.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. So
this is not financial advice, though.
For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, Another Block is a platform which lets you buy a share of royalties in your favorite artist. And you own the royalties alongside that artist. So basically, you get a share of the income from Spotify and Apple Music and streaming services like that.
Exactly. And the first ever drop was last week. We got a portion of it. Next one's going to be released really soon. So stay tuned to socials and we'll see what happens.
It's exciting times.
It is. Hello.
Hey, guys. Hey.
How's it going? Mate, we're all Australian. How good's that?
Just a couple of Aussies talking about
it. Aussie boys.
Having a chat. I was looking at a little bit what you've done previously, and actually pretty cool. Like, you've worked sort of at director level. I would say, like, in strategy and growth would probably be like maybe the general term for at director level for like H&R Block, Flight Center, and News Corp, I think, Australia. I was thinking, like, man, that's a lot of roles and a lot of different massive organizations in Australia. If you're not from Australia, there's some of the biggest in Australia. And so I guess the question there is, like, do you have any advice? I noticed that there's a lot of growth around the Web3 industry at the moment. And so do you have any advice for people who are starting businesses, starting startups in their bedroom, and they've just got a couple of people there? What's the advice around the balance between growth and sustainability for all people involved?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, startup businesses are pretty much hinged on runways at the moment, right? You know, and have been for a long period of time. So it's making sensible decisions. You know, really, if you're trying to build a business from the bottom up, that's what you need to do. You need to really make sure you are solving a problem. You know, you see a lot of startups coming out here going, I've got a great idea. And if it's not solving a real problem, right, you're wasting your time. So, you know, that sense check with your potential use cases of, you know, where that problem sits and how your solution might, you know, solve that problem is a really good starting point. If you don't have commercial experience, it's, you know, I'm sort of grateful that I've had 16 years in that corporate sector to learn everything from, you know, sales, marketing, operations, strategy, you know, and running large scale businesses to know how to run a P&L. You know, business is business at the end of the day. You know, it's great to have ideas as well and a brand and positioning, but if you don't know how to run an operation financially, then, you know, you are going to struggle. So, you know, lean in. I like the beauty of, you know, the new world of DAOs where you can lean in on, you know, people who love what you're doing and lean in on their experience. You know, I've got some of the most amazing people that work for me with, you know, very interesting backgrounds, and, you know, some from the corporate sectors, some from the music, some from tech, but leaning in on, you know, the I guess the skill sets that are around you, and always make sure you've got like a mastermind group. So it doesn't matter what stage of life or, you know, business development you're at with whatever project you're working on, it's always good to have some wiser mindsets that sit around with completely different perspectives that aren't attached to your project that can say, I can see holes in this piece here, and you maybe need to approach it like this. So yeah, hopefully that answers the question there.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's some pretty good advice around that. Like, I like the idea of surrounding yourself with the right people as well. That's cool. So basically, moving on to the platform. So it's called Ocean Floor, and it's a crowdfunding platform basically for artists. And it's about supporting those artists to create their own reward NFTs for their fans, basically. So the main point of difference that I could kind of find is that you've got a smart project fund, which works alongside your industry partners. And basically that's like your marketers, producers, engineers, event organizers as well. And through the use of that product, the artists can enjoy that cash flow all the way up front. And they won't have to worry about the struggling artist mentality and can focus on the creative side. Is that basically the idea of the project?
Absolutely, Isaac. Good question. You know, our intent always started with knowing that artists earn 13% revenue globally, and the commoditization process has been the same for hundreds of years. Artists get paid last, right? You know, it's those two factors are just room for improvement. And, you know, we kicked off with a crowdfunding metaphor, you know, wanted to be the first Web3 crowdfunding model, leaning in on DeFi and opportunities to reward artists in different ways. But the more we fleshed it out, and I think I was sitting in a conference in West Palm Beach in Florida a few months ago for the Bankless launch over there. And, you know, the first speech was VC Chris Dixon from A16Z, you know, and he was talking about the creator economy and what it meant to put creators first. And I'm like, hold on, we've been building this stuff for 12, 18 months now. It's exactly what we're trying to do, is to put value into the creation process, not just the output of artwork, right? And what, you know, as I was talking to my business partner, Sam, about it, we're like, you know, why do artists, you know, work five jobs, or, you know, they struggle to try and put out, like, it took me 7 years to record an album, and, you know, working jobs that I probably didn't like, and, you know, managing cover bands, original bands, just to make it happen. But that just doesn't make sense, right? Like, if you went to any other industry and said, we're going to cut out 80% of you, or, you know, plus of your, or 90% of your income, you know, it just doesn't make sense. So, you know, we started with good intention, and we have been working solidly on the crowdfunding piece. You know, financially, it's probably been our biggest investment so far. And strategically across, I guess, our back end of Solidity Dev and front end dev teams, we've been building out that strategy, process, and legal accountability with that for quite a period of time. You would think that, you know, that would be a good incentive to attract people, and it has been. We've attracted amazing, I guess, team members to come and work for us in that period of time, and then artists that and industry that get what we're doing and started to come along the journey with us. So crowdfunding was absolutely the core of our model to kick off with. But then when we've held an artist information night in Fremantle a few months ago with, I guess, you know, musicians, artist industry from around WA, there was such an energy in the room. It was, you know, it was like, this looks really interesting. I'm still a little bit confused. I'm a bit fearful. I'm just going to be honest, you know, and it's like, okay, well, maybe like we all have been down the rabbit hole of learning, you know, blockchain, NFT in this space. We just, you know, really wanted to focus on providing a bit more of a structured education piece for artists and industry. And I know there's a lot of, you know, blockchain modules out there, but we just want to tone it down a bit, make it simplified, make it fun for musicians, make it not scary, and build trust with what we're doing. So we thought the education and then helping them put money in their pockets to create the next project, whether it's, you know, a song, an album, or, you know, funding the next tour, you know, there's really a massive opportunity here for that.
That's awesome. Clint, that's actually so cool, because I think I was watching, I don't know if I was watching that. I'm not sure if you ended up putting that on YouTube. I was watching Cav Temperley from Eskimo Joe. I think he was a part of one of your discussions somewhere live there in Perth. And he was talking about this issue at a practical level that you're talking about. He was talking about, you know, the money involved with having to put up front for an album. You know, he's talking in the tens of thousands of dollars. And it is difficult. And so it makes a lot of sense. And so another thing, I think on your website, there was a little intro video. It's yourself and Sam, who's your co-founder, that you mentioned there. And he mentioned this great term, which maybe you could expand on, which I think maybe defines a little bit of what you've mentioned already, which is create and earn, which I know we've seen a lot of play to earn. That's like some common lingo, I suppose, in the industry now. Is create and earn basically like your definition of what you've been talking about there?
Absolutely. And that just feeds into that creator economy, right? And it was like, we come up with that terminology, you know, 12, 16, 18 months ago now, but to see that the branding of creator economy is now out there, and it just fits into that narrative. It is what we're trying to achieve, to put value into the creation process, and for artists to feel that sense of belonging when they're creating, not just, you know, trying to struggle to get the output and get paid at the end.
Totally. That's cool.
Yeah, that's great. Are there any limitations on what, say, the artist can specifically do? Like, in terms of product, it's still a little bit broad, I think, in terms of, like, they can choose to have... can they choose to have, like, an NFT category with some specific set conditions, and then that has to be met by them, or that has to be met by their fans? for the NFT to actually serve its purpose, or is it more like a white label service where an artist comes in and they say, I want to do a random merch drop if they were at my concert, and if they show a ticket, then they can have my merch drop? Or is it just like a preset, like, this, whoever buys this will get a t-shirt, you know, like, what? Yeah,
it's a good question. You know, like, I think so our smart contracts will obviously define the boundaries of specific rules around, you know, the most common NFTs that are put through our platform. But we really believe that the creative process that where artists, you know, this is all about the future of, you know, artists monetizing, is looking after their top 100 fans or a top 1,000 fans. There's two articles written, there's two lots of research that sit around what's the right number. Is it 100 fans or 1,000 fans? The end of the day, it depends what the average spend per fan is for your product, right? And we really believe that the creative process for artists will come from playing around with, I label it bundling, right? How do you bundle physical and digital products on chain, off chain, and be creative with it in a way that there's uniqueness, you know, there's you know, uniqueness is key, but there's some creative stuff in there. Like I bought, was it Tones and Eyes NFT maybe about a year ago from, it was when did you see that one with Rolling Stone?
Yeah, no, I know Tones and Eyes. I didn't realize they were doing that.
Yeah, so she dropped with Rolling Stone magazine, which we all know. It was a signed copy of her on the front cover of the magazine. And I went, you know what? I like Tones and Eyes. My daughter loves her. But what I'll do is I'll buy the NFT for my daughter. And, you know, I'll sort out her wallet later on. Or I'll give her my wallet, one of them. But so obviously purchased the digital NFT. And then in the mail, within a week, I received the signed copy with Tones' signature on the front. And then cassette tape of the digital out of her first album, right? So I'm like, okay, there's digital and physical products. I wonder how much fun artists can have with this bundling process. And what we will do is educate them, help them, hold their hand. And we are doing that at the moment through a bunch of webinars where we're helping artists prepare their NFTs with utility, is to say, well, outside of the actual audio and, you know, some artwork, what else can you do that's fun, creative in physical, you know, product or experience? And so we're providing the templating around that will sit with that for the crowdfunding piece, and obviously for NFT, we've got an NFT marketplace as well. And, you know, just I think that's where the creativity comes. The ones that do it well will see repeat business quicker than, you know, the others, and it's just going to be a trial and error. We've seen some amazing stuff out there in the marketplace. Gotcha. And we'll keep coaching and educating in that space as well.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Interesting fact, a good friend of mine just went and toured with Tones and I in Europe and the US. They just got back this week. And so, I think they're awesome. And I don't know why I wasn't aware of that, but that's a really cool example of a real world use case. And so question. So let's say, for example, Isaac and I are going to write a song and we want to use the platform just for people so they can really get a practical sort of example of how it works. If we were to do that, could you maybe just step through? I know on the website it's got some really nice step throughs. Be cool to explain that here. Could you step through the process of what it would look like? Maybe, as you're saying, maybe it would start with a little bit of sort of teaching, instructing. And then where does it go from there in regards to, do you speak with us and go, okay, you know, is it consultative where you're like, okay, we think you guys could offer these things? Could you just step us through the process a little bit of maybe ideally what it might look like?
Absolutely. It's definitely, you know, in this onboarding part, and I know a lot of Web3 music businesses that are evolving, they're like, how are you going with your onboarding of artists? Like, that's just the challenge, right? To go, you know, are they Web3 natives, degens, or are they just learning about it? They're excited. So it depends. I think the curation of helping and holding hands and nurturing through this phase is extremely important. So there's definitely a consultative process at this point in time in our life cycle of our business. I'd say that would be definitely the key thing. So what my question back to you, Nathan and Isaac, would be, have you already written some material? Like, I know you're going to write a song, but have you got any old CDs or any songs that you've written in the past, would be my first question. And I'd be like, well, if you have, then let's get some product up on the website now. Well, NFT marketplace will be live in the next 6 to 8 weeks. That's been in development for about 10 months now. So you know, would demonstrate to you and say, right, well, now that you've got that artwork up, do you have any fans that have followed you in writing your songs over the last period of time? How many is that? Let's remarket back to them to let them know that you've got something for sale and this is how they purchase it, right? So then all of a sudden you're in the process, your fans are in the process, and as you'll have some that purchase the product, some that miss out, and then your second remarketing opportunity is to go, okay, I'm going to start a project. I want to create a new album or a new song. Here it is. It's called whatever it is, your one song or your album name, and you put it up, you know, and like you would traditionally in Patreon or Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you'd say, here's the product, here's the amount, and this is what you'd get back for it. Would then educate the artist on, here's all those creative ways to bundle your product and put it, you know, to market. And then, you know, the funds themselves go into a staking program. We've got, you know, aggregators to help that funding achieve more rewards, DeFi rewards. Leveraging DeFi is obviously key. And then while that fund's maturing, the artist is obviously out creating their art, right? So studio time, so I think it took us 3 months that we spent in the studio tracking our album. Track your album, funds mature, and then they pay the industry partner, whether that's a studio or a videographer. They can pay them in crypto or they can pay them in fiat. So we know there's going to be that period of us bringing, you know, I guess traditional music industry just accept another form of payment, and that's all it will be into the future. Or at this point in time, you know, the ability to off ramp with fiat. So nice and easy process, product, you know, both the physical, digital, distributed to the NFT investors or product investors or crowdfunding investors, whatever you want to call them, backers, fans, super fans, whatever they may be. And then we then help to market. So depending on your size of your fan base, you know, we either help you remarket back to your fan base or we connect you with new fan bases within the ocean floor ecosystem. That's
wow.
It.
Wow.
That's really cool. It's almost like it reminds me a lot of Airbnb in the early days, where they had to go to people's houses and say, look, let us take the photos for you. That your photos were terrible. Like, let us do this for you. We'll walk you through the process. This is how you use it. We understand that it's a brand new concept, but like, so like, we'll need to show you how to use it. My next question goes on to a bit more of the OFM, which is the kind of token, the native token that you guys are launching from through the platform. So many people purchase Ethereum because they believe in what it does at more of a platform level. They don't want to spend their Ethereum on one individual project or NFT, for example. They just want to hold it at that ETH level. Ocean Floor will have its own native token, OFM. Do you think anyone will just buy and hold it because they believe in the platform as a whole? Or do you want people to only buy the coin if they're actually going to use it to support a specific artist? Do you think that there'll be a mix of both? Or are you hoping that only people will only just use it purely for utility?
Hopefully there's a mixture of both. Yeah, like, as we're going to get people that come in and go, this is a really great project. We understand they've got a great value set. They've got great technology. They've got an amazing team that's behind them. They're actually here for the long run to help artists earn more. This is a good project. I'm just going to buy and hope see what happens with that token. With that, obviously, they get their governance and voting rights that they come in and add, you know, decisions that help evolve the protocol and, you know, the culture of the business of where it's heading. Then obviously the other side of the coin is the other side of the token is to invest into artists, you know, with the best pairing that makes sense for that individual. So when we do launch our marketplace in particular and the crowdfunding, we have paired up with, you know, USDC to take out the volatility for investment, because if you're a fan and you go, well, I put in $50 in this artist and then all of a sudden it's dropped to $20, you're gonna be pissed off to kick off with, and then you're going to feel like you're disservicing the artist that you love, right? So that pairing makes sense for us to kick off in there, and having the OFM ability to token to be able to then grow with the true value of our ecosystem is absolutely paramount for us.
Yep, gotcha. You're talking about a little bit of governance stuff there. Maybe we could talk about the DAO. And I think it's, for me, maybe I'm just living under a rock, but this is the first time I've seen this sort of DAO structure. I know it does exist, but it'd be awesome to talk more about it. So basically, you've got OFM Council, and people who own the token can nominate towards people being on that council. Could you talk a little bit more about how that works? Because for me, that was a really new concept in the DAO world.
Yeah, that's okay. Look, I need to point out that a lot of our original tokenomics and business modeling, I guess, blueprint, we've been working with one of our advisors. You guys would probably be aware of the business Alluvium. Yeah, the amazing product and strategy. You know, those guys peaked, you know, $19 billion fully diluted value in the peak of late last year, you know, within 12 to 18 months of their launch. So, you know, great measures of success in there, things to do and not to do. Obviously, learn at every protocol that we look at across the market. You know, I love watching how that DAO evolves, and I love reading the comments of the DAO community to go, okay, the new council election's coming out. Do we want to keep the founders in? Do we not want to keep them in? You know, like that's the reality of decentralization, right? And it's like, well, hopefully people will continue to vote me and my partner in for a period of time. And I think that's quite important. And the other thing, Nathan, is, you know, the right time to launch the DAO. So obviously they're trying to write some pre-regulated structure for the Australian government or what DAOs look like. Joni Pirovich, who's the number one lawyer in Australia, who's advising the Australian government on, who has been advising Australian government on DAO structures, is, you know, working on one of her own protocols at the moment called LawFi DAO. And they're all about creating that bridge between, I guess, you know, when regulation comes in and now founders that are in limbo trying to work out, everyone's trying to do their best thing, you know, and upfront and transparent. And we're just going, give us some structure. So Joni is, you know, leading this space with, you know, amazing mindset, creating our own DAO structure of lawyers and legal advice. And it's about when do you launch at the right time as a DAO? You know, we've got a bunch of our protocol that we've been building for 18 months, and, you know, it's probably 85% of the way there for some parts of it, and others more so and others less. But, you know, we really want to get it to a nice structured shape when then people can just add and contribute and say, if we add this piece of protocol, then, you know, that's going to do that for the system and it's going to be more engaging and we want to be here more often. So I really like that power of outside of DAO structure. And I always talk about this is I look at the future of what this model is designed to do. And I look at it as a metaphor of a brain, a global brain, and all of these individual brains that come across the world, across boundaries, across, you know, regardless of governments, and come together and problem solve on the things that they love doing most. Think of that intellectual property and that IP coming together, you know, energetically, intellectually. Like where our system will go in 3 to 5 years to into 20 years, we don't know, but we're super proud about it and proud of that structure. And then the other thing, just while we're in DAO structure around, I think it's important to have flexibility in how councils are voted in, but I also think that our ability to let our community vote on our ESG strategy, We're Ocean Floor. So we'll have reference into projects that are already established, businesses that are already established that are about ocean rejuvenation, and we think that's quite important to have, the contribution back to Mother Nature as we work through this new world that we're in.
That's amazing.
That's really fascinating. I didn't actually know about that we had any actual people working with government to actually kind of ratify those DAOs into real world law. So that's really cool to kind of learn about. We'll actually have to listen back for that name and try and work that out. So going further on to from kind of the DAO structure to the community is kind of where my question is going. So there's about 500 members in the Discord so far, and what I'm always really interested in what projects are doing is the importance of building community first or launching a product first. So is it easier to build that audience and build that community, and more important to build that community, or is it more important to actually build a really good product and then just start testing it on the first 2-3 users or whatever, just like as you go, and then build the community up from there? Like what are your thoughts around community building?
Yeah, I think that they need to run in parallel, absolutely, because you need to build product and you need to build community. But the focus is about building quality community, not about building numbers, right? That's what we're, and we learned pretty early on, like new into crypto marketing outside of anything. We had a lot of botted community coming into our Telegram community there for a while, and numbers were going through the roof. But there were, you know, when we did the filtering and the vetting, it was like, let's clean that up, let's shut it down, let's just use it as an update channel only. And then we found that, you know, we're getting a lot of really good traction in Twitter spaces. We're finding that, you know, there's real people in there having conversations from the heart, from all different levels of experience. That's the real people. That they're the people that we want in, right? And that's okay. You know, I think in our marketing strategy and in our community build, there's a variety of different approaches. One is, you know, the cold strategy, the ambassador strategy, and create some noise within their communities. But I think it's paramount to make sure you're listening to people at the ground. And, you know, the information that we had with Cav from Eskimo Joe, and, you know, listening to where the pain points were for artists. Like, we had one artist on the night say, actually, I'm not motivated by the Web3 thing or NFTs. I'm excited because it'll create me more money, but can someone else do it for me? And we're like, yes. Their answer is yes. We will help you create more money for it. You don't want the education. You don't want the crowdfunding. You're a home producer. All you want to do is pick up your, Cav would put it, the 2D artwork and turn it into 3D artwork and you more money. Sure.
Yeah. And it's understandable. You monetize it anyway. Yeah. Because they never entered the music world to be a tech genius. And so there shouldn't necessarily be an expectation for that. And so that's cool. You guys are definitely filling that gap, right? I think, I suppose you maybe saw it. Question, which I think is slightly off topic, but I think really interesting. I noticed there was like one mention of, I think you called it OF Metaverse. And so I assume the goal there is it's a little bit more of a value add for people who are a part of the community, for artists who are using your platform. And you mentioned one thing, which I don't even know if this is interesting, but for me, I thought it was cool. You mentioned using TeleMIDI, which I'd never heard of before. And so I went and looked at it, and it's like MIDI, which is like, people probably don't know what that is, but it's like how you can control like maybe different pieces of equipment. It's usually used in music, but it's used in different industries as well. And so it allows you to control different stuff across the internet. And so my assumption was maybe this is so you could have different artists on different places in the world all playing together. I don't know. What's the goal behind the remote music space idea?
It is absolutely about that. It's about connectivity. It's about connecting artists across the world in real time to jam on their instruments. And at this point in time, TeleMIDI, you know, it's designed for, it's been tested, and I've seen it with my own eyes and through VR goggles as well. But the technology, I was in SAE Creative Institute in Perth a few weeks ago. One of the guys that works with us, his name is Matt Bray. He's developed the technology. It's behind closed walls. It's, you know, it's an amazing piece of software that he's designed and is part of the ocean floor ecosystem. And what I watched him do was create a live performance with it. He was jamming from Perth with another guy in London, 25,000 kilometers around, the long way around, in real time. The guys were jamming. I think latency was, you know, 0.25 milliseconds. I think it was, you know, lower than the human ear can hear. And then we've created some VR sort of experience for that. So we thought that, and I was speaking to this guy, Matt, a few days ago, and he's like, in a few weeks' time, we're going to connect a pipe organ band in Canada with a remote music community in South Africa and a studio in Perth, and we're going to jam. And I'm like, the world needs to know about this. This is going to be crazy. So the reason, to answer your question, why it's built in as part of our value add is, you know, we want people to have fun when they come to our platform as well. You know, there's going to be fans that come along that just go, I just want to watch that. And then there's going to be artists. And the beauty of this technology, all you need is your laptop. It's run from laptops. So you plug in your DJ equipment and you jam. And Matt's words to me the other day was, Clint, we're 2 years away from the kids that grew up creating music through colors and pushing up and down on buttons. You know, they're about to hit the world. So we've got a massive market coming that will feed into our system and come and, you know, help grow with it as well.
100%. Now that's cool. That's very, very cool. I love it. I'm so glad you guys are partnering with them.
So testing and soft launch for September is the initial timeline. After 10 months of building, as you mentioned there, What did the founding team start as, and what does it look like now? How much have you guys grown?
Yeah, founding team started as an idea. Sam and I then could become business partners after a period of time.
Nice.
And then, you know, we've organically attracted people that go, we want to work for you. You know, what does that look like? Can we just come and contribute? We want to learn about Web3 or whatever. We've got an array of, you know, full-time employees, part-time employees, mostly contractors at this point in time. And then we have an intern status relationship with SA Creative Institute. So we've got students that are now coming doing the intern hours with us, the minimum amount of hours. And now we're providing employment for some of those students because they're developing the metaverse in a really beautiful way. So in relation to totality of numbers, look, I think we've got about seven full-timers, probably about 15 contractors, and you know, we're working with a bunch of agencies as well. At any one time, I guess in our peak of development, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, we could have up to 30 or 40 people working simultaneously on the project on any given day.
Wow, that's so cool. I did notice on the website there's a contributors page and there's a lot of different people there, and I was getting that vibe as well. It felt like there was people there who it's their job, and there's people there who it's their passion and their job, and it's people there who are just maybe not even paid to just, you know, contribute. And so that was really cool. I noticed I think maybe some of the tech department guys are from one of the agencies that you were mentioning there, and I thought that's so cool because I think as founders, I can imagine that there'd be a lot of people with a lot of really great ideas, and they see an issue, whether it's in the music industry, maybe it's in the property world, whatever it is, and they're not like, you know, they're not necessarily programmers, and they don't necessarily have the back knowledge and context for all this kind of stuff. And so to see like an agency like that being utilized in a way where it's like, you know, we had a chat to a guy who does a similar thing with people who are actually he runs a business in the Ukraine where he provides people with CTOs. And it's so cool because it almost kind of like removes the limitations that you'd already have. You've got to look for someone who's, you know, we need a co-founder who's like a hardcore programmer, but the ability to use that seems really awesome. I don't know. Have you found working with agencies? I don't know whether you do any marketing agencies or whatever it is. Have you found that pretty useful? Like, is that something you'd recommend to startups?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we like our problem and product market fit come, you know, I sat down with the head guy at Hatched, who's a head developer in Perth, Hatch and Adapter. And it was probably 6 months before we actually engaged them. And I said, look, I'm just trying to put money in the pockets of artists and NFTs and I don't know what I'm trying to do, but can you help me? And he was like, we don't actually have back-end developers here. You need Solidity Dev. And so hunted around Australia. And then Sam and I actually did interviews all around the world. And we ended up coming up with this amazing team in India who've been building blockchain for 4 or 5 years. They're computer scientists. They're bunch of mates that work together and have for years, and 40 developers that sit in their team. So then all of a sudden I come back to the front end team in Perth and they're like, wow, you've progressed. You've got a strategy in place now. You've got this. And then one of their things, you know, and please look up those partners that we're working with, because they are the best in field of all of their verticals that they work in. Like Hatch, for example, already work with an incentive share type scheme model within their business prior to being a Web3 agency. They're like, you know, giving tokens to, you know, teams is important, but they didn't have tokens, you know, working in a share type environment. So it is important to bring in expertise in whatever you're building. You know, like, it's great to have the idea, but you've always got to have people that are smarter than you, that can challenge your thinking, that can bring real technical expertise to the table. And to answer your question, so that's from a tech point of view. From a marketing point of view, you know, we've got an interesting position, right? We've got, like you guys, we've got, you know, music and crypto narratives are quite conflicting. Musicians are like, you know, what's this? And then you've got your crypto narrative, and you don't want to simplify, you know, the messaging too much. So it's just trying to find that sweet spot. So, you know, we've worked with a digital marketing agency, MITP, and then we've also worked with a crypto marketing agency. And then we've had an audit done from a PR music agency to say, how's this going to sit if we go public now? And they pulled us to pieces and said,
wow,
yeah, amazing what you're doing, but take all the fluff out and just tell us how your product helps an artist earn money. So, you know, we're all ears. We are looking to continue to build in-house and build that team out. But we have an amazing, the people, the partners that we work with now are just, yeah, we're very proud. They're the best in the field.
So cool. I love it.
That was oceanfloor.io, Clint Arthur, building products, helping artists in the Web3 space. Where can people find out more?
Yeah, and tell us about the Twitter Spaces too. I think you've been doing a bit of that.
Yeah, so Twitter Spaces are kicking off every Wednesday. Where are we, 10 o'clock? That's 10 o'clock in Perth. So I think it's, 12 o'clock in Eastern Standard Time in Australia. Yeah, every Wednesday, jump on, join the community, come in and have a chat. If you've got something of value add, absolutely. Yeah, oceanfloor.io is our URL. And then our socials, come and check us out on Facebook, you know, Instagram. Join our Discord, get in part of the community, help us build this thing. Like, this is as much about you as it is us, right? So, and which is what inspires us each day. So come along for the journey.
Amazing. Sick. Clint, it's gone pretty quick, but thank you so much for having a chat. I know maybe it feels like we didn't even have enough time, but I feel like it was such a cool overview of what you guys are doing. And so I really appreciate your time. Like, honestly, I know that, you know, starting a business and stuff takes a lot of time. And so thanks for giving it to us for a moment.
Gentlemen, great to be here. Thanks for everything. And yeah, hopefully see you around the block.